Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC for Monday, September 9th, 2013, a day after Republican Congressman Peter King of Long Island announced he is running for president, the first hat in the ring for 2016. Ted Cruz, watch your back. The day after Bashar al-Assad asked Charlie Rose, chemical weapons? What chemical weapons? I don't see any chemical weapons. Today's the day when Congress returns from a month-long summer recess to vote on Syria military action. Yesterday's ABC headcount, 44 in favor, more than 220 opposed. It's the first day of school in New York City. Parents, you can exhale now after that long summer. Are you relieved? And it's the day before New York primary day, when you'll have the chance to vote for candidates like Anthony Weiner, Elliot Spitzer, and John Katsimatidis, who says his son should be stopped and frisked if he's walking funny.
You know, if he had his pants half down with his underwear showing, if he had his hat turned backwards, you know, just walking down the street as if you were drunk or, you know, just walking funny. That's what I meant.
That from John Katsimatidis.
Otherwise known as the Catman.
He made his stop-and-frisk remark in yesterday's final Republican mayoral debate, which brings us to our first guests, WNYC political reporter Anna Sale and Ozzie Paber, a politics junkie, and I mean that in the nicest way, from Capitol, New York. Hi, Anna. Hi, Ozzie.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
And let's start here. Mayor Bloomberg inserted himself into the Democratic primary over the weekend, telling New York Magazine that Bill de Blasio is running a racist campaign for using his wife and non-funny walking son to show he has a biracial family. Really, Anna?
Yeah, well, it's worth reading the whole bit of the interview, because he actually interrupts Chris Smith and says the word racist. Chris Smith from New York Magazine, and Chris Smith says racist, and he says class warfare and racist. And then the mayor goes on to say, I don't believe that Bill de Blasio is personally racist, but it's like me going into a Jewish neighborhood and pointing out that I'm Jewish. So, but he chose the word racist, and that, of course, has gotten an enormous response, a lot from the Bill de Blasio campaign, and then you have this new ad for $11.99 SEIU Juno Diaz, the novelist, says, I look at Bill de Blasio's family. The mayor sees some racism. I see what New York looks like.
It is a racial appeal, Ozzie. I tend to think it's a legitimate way for a white guy to signal to voters of color that he gets them. You have to tell different communities you get them. David Dinkins had to reassure white voters that he wasn't early Malcolm X or something in his views of whites. Mayor Bloomberg goes around speaking Spanish when he's in front of Hispanic audiences. I don't know what's different or controversial here. I think this is more about Bloomberg than de Blasio.
It's a lot more about Bloomberg, but what's happening with the de Blasio campaign is that if you talk to some of the people in the chattering classes, they say that what de Blasio has set up is an argument against identity politics. He's campaigned as the most progressive candidate, speaking about stop and frisk in a way that was a bit stronger than the other candidates, arguably. And he had made a lot of his policy positions geared towards picking off supporters in Bill Thompson's base, in Christine Quinn's base, who, if she's elected, would be the first woman and the first openly gay mayor. And he had set up this idea, or his campaign was seen as a way of testing whether or not people vote more along
identity politics
versus ideology party lines. And this example of how he's using his family, you could see that as a counterexample to what he's basically been doing. He's been saying, my policy positions are with you. Mm-hmm. I may not look like you, but I'm here in spirit.
And listeners, what do you think about the mayor's remark or the use of de Blasio's family in his commercials to tell the public he is married to a black woman and they have a child together? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And maybe it was a late game strategy because as of the middle of July, he was still around 10% in the polls.
Well, he's always campaigned with the idea of presenting his family up front. In fact, in 2009, when he ran for public advocate, his campaign sent out mailers featuring his wife, and the phrase next to it was, he gets it. which was very clear what they were saying.
So how different, Anna, and maybe this is an opinion question, so everybody will answer it for themselves, but how different is it from Thompson pointing out his Caribbean roots or sending me a flyer that I got from his campaign over the weekend with all pictures of him with black voters and the headline, "It's time for a mayor for us"?
This is Bill de Blasio's family. I mean, he didn't just get married to run for election. He didn't have – these kids are teenagers and in their 20s. So it's been quite some time that this has been his family. So in that way, it's legitimate. This is Bill de Blasio. This is who he is, and this is what he's presenting to voters. The question of using a minor, a teenage son, as the primary spokesperson of the campaign in the first television ad – with Dante, that's a slightly different question. But certainly this is Bill de Blasio presenting to voters who he and his family are.
And I think it's interesting that, as we often see, especially near the end of New York primaries, even those who have not run as identity candidates are pulling that out now that it's get out the vote time. I mentioned the Thompson flyer and his mentioning his Caribbean-ness more and more on the stump. Christine Quinn, who has not really run as, "I'm going to be the first woman mayor," all of a sudden she is. Listen to Quinn yesterday on the stump.
If we want to live in a city where somebody's gender, if they're a girl, is an asset, not anything ever described as a liability, then we have work to do between now and Tuesday.
So when it's get out the vote time, the script changes.
Right. And people are going to have a lot of things to argue about and debate after the primary Tuesday. And one of them is going to be Christine Quinn's strategy. She didn't have a lot of options in terms of how she set herself up politically. She helped the mayor get a third term. She supported Ray Kelly. She's been part of the mayor's she's helped pass the city budgets. There was no way for her to position herself as anything other than the continuity candidate on policy. When it comes to the identity politics of this, they downplayed the idea that she would be the first woman, and they downplayed the idea that she would be a historic candidate as the first openly gay mayor in New York City. But it did start to come up when Anthony Weiner was emerging into the race. I believe it was right after the New York Times Magazine interview where where Anthony Weiner and Huma were on the cover. Quinn had an event where she showed off 1,000 women supporting Quinn, and then she went to Brooklyn, and Marty Markowitz endorsed her, partly because she was a woman. So they began using it, but it went back. But they never made that a consistent part of the campaign.
Mel in Clinton Hill, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Mel. Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yeah. So, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that statement that Bloomberg made was just pure hypocrisy. 2.5 years ago, I think it was, on the front page of the Times, it had that Bloomberg had less blacks in his administration than Giuliani. And here he has the nerve to call de Blasio's ad racist. He sounds like a wounded animal that's fighting, you know, to just say anything to hurt de Blasio's campaign.
Mel, thank you. The mayor said, did you want to respond to that, Ozzie? You have a quizzical look on your face.
You know, it's hard to understand the motivations of Mayor Bloomberg. And as somebody told me, sometimes he's just a guy who speaks off the cuff. He's a billionaire. He's winding down his term. And it's not always as calculated as I want to hurt de Blasio.
Right. And I have a feeling he may, at the end of the day, whether he says it publicly or not, think that he overstated that particular thing. However, the mayor also said in his New York Magazine interview, Anna, that if de Blasio wins and Joe Loda wins the Republican nomination, he'll endorse Loda for mayor.
The other thing he said that I thought was interesting was on stop and frisk. He said, look, if this my administration won't be appropriate for me to get too involved, but if this continues to come up, I will make my views known. So I thought that was an interesting foreshadowing as well.
But I wonder if saying that – because what he wouldn't take back, even if given the opportunity, is that he thinks it's a class warfare campaign, the two New Yorks and the inequality theme of the de Blasio campaign. Loda said that too in the Republican debate. But if he would go so far as to say that he would endorse Loda for mayor, that Bloomberg would, if it's Loda versus de Blasio, does that suggest that if Quinn is the Democratic nominee, she might get his nod?
If Quinn is the Democratic nominee, will she get Bloomberg? I mean, the question is, would Quinn want Bloomberg's nod at this point? I mean, the Democratic primary has evolved to where it is all about who can articulate the ways they are not like Mayor Bloomberg. Uh-huh. And he didn't help his case. With the class warfare line, what he was referring to there, there's also a large part in that interview where he articulates his worldview, his governing philosophy, that it's really good for the city to have billionaires here because that's where tax revenue comes from, and that's what pays for everybody else.
Right.
That's what he said.
So, Ozzie, what do you think, to what Anna suggests there, what do you think a Bloomberg endorsement is worth in the general election, not in the Democratic primary, but in the general election? Is it a plus? Is it a minus? Is it better than Gristides? Is it a wash?
I think if de Blasio could arrange for Bloomberg to endorse Quinn, he would do it. I think Quinn was asked about this earlier today on another radio show, and somebody said, you know, would you accept Bloomberg's endorsement, or what do you think of it? And she said, well, he's not offering it, and you know what? I don't even think it would have that much of an impact. And she tried to downplay it so much.
Right. But I'm serious. Not in the Democratic primary, where obviously they've all calculated that it's a minus. In the general, and we haven't elected a Democrat in New York City as mayor since 1989.
Well, if it's Quinn versus Loda and Bloomberg endorses Quinn, if mm-hmm. I mean, that would really tip the scales arguably towards Quinn's favor. Loda is going after the kind of moderate Democrats that really would be in line with Quinn's constituency. Now, if it's de Blasio versus Loda and Bloomberg endorses Loda, you have a crystal clear distinction between the candidates. And it's one that Michael Goodwin of the New York Post actually wrote about. He said, imagine Rudy Giuliani and Michael Bloomberg standing next to Loda, and on the other side you have de Blasio and Sharpton. And I don't think any one of those people he mentioned would be afraid of that matchup.
Huh.
They would actually welcome it. And in de Blasio's camp, it would set up the kind of argument that he's been talking about for so long.
By the way, here's the constituency that de Blasio was going after yesterday, the caffeinated volunteer.
All I ask you is to go out there and get your Starbucks or your Red Bull or whatever will keep you from having to sleep for the next 48 hours and bring this home.
Ramping up his turnout the vote team for the next day and a half. Robert in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Okay.
So I do online focus groups for airline miles. Strange opening, but I would say about 4 or 5 weeks ago, it was about New York City politics. And it was specifically about this Bill de Blasio ad with his son. Mm-hmm. They played it. I had to answer, I don't know, 8 or 10 or more questions about what I thought of the ad, what I thought of his son being in it. Did it make me want to vote for him more or less? That I didn't really care about, but it really made me like de Blasio. The son came off credible and like he cared, loved his father, really believed in his father for mayor. And I thought, after I watched it, I thought, you know, he's kind of, if he doesn't feature his family in an ad, then everyone's going to go, well, why isn't he doing it?
Yeah,
I don't see what the problem is. Well, I think he did it for the same reason that Anthony Weiner's wife is not in an ad. It's not going to help.
Robert, thank you very much. Karen in Ditmas Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Hi, yes. I mean, my reaction to the Bill de Blasio ad was, this is his family. I'm a biracial woman in my 40s. And the idea that if my mother featured me or talked about me or I came somewhere with her, that she was using me to advance her social career, her political career, professional career, I just think is odd. And I think it's a perspective that most people of color don't hold.
Do you feel at all that he's pandering to you by rolling this out in this way?
No, I actually feel that if they weren't featured, I would, you know, is he embarrassed of them or what? This is his family. This is who he is. I grew up in a very diverse community. There was a lot of biracial children, a lot of mixed marriages. And if that wasn't featured or if that wasn't shown, I would think it was odd. Like, I would think it was odd. That's who he is.
Right. But it's, on the other hand, totally normal to protect your kids from the public spotlight. The Obamas don't let their kids show up in, you know, in magazines or anything. So this is a conscious decision, too, when some politicians make a conscious decision not to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't thought about it in those terms, but I think the Obama children are younger. They certainly are seen. Maybe if they were old enough to, you know, to speak, they would. Yeah. But they're significantly younger. I mean, his children are older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Christine Quinn's right. on the campaign trail with her elderly father. You know, Huma's been on the campaign trail right. With her husband. And there's not been the same commentary.
Thank you, Karen. I really appreciate your call.
Oh, and with respect to the Dante ad, the one thing that sometimes gets lost is the way that it was set up. It wasn't just showing Dante. It identified him as a teenager mm-hmm. from Brooklyn, and it was the last line that had this big reveal. He's my dad. And reporters know who Dante is, so it sort of got lost mm-hmm. on us. But for the public, it was a big reveal.
And by the way, I think that the Obamas have done such a good job of shielding Sasha and Malia from public view that – our last caller and probably a lot of other people still think they're really little. actually, one of them is 14, which is 1 year younger than Dante.
Dante's so. Now 16. He just
16.
Had a birthday.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Dante.
Hazel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Hazel.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say that I consider what Blasio is doing is exploitation of a child. I think if the Clintons would have done it or if the Obamas would have done it, it would have been all over the news. It would have been the discussion of every talk show. I think it's exploitation, and I think it's manipulating voters, and that was the deal breaker for me, and I went over to Thompson because of that.
Uh-huh. Really? Why to Thompson?
Well, Thompson has always seemed very dignified and he's held together. He's very controlled in his mannerisms, in his statements. He does nothing embarrassing, really. And I think he's strong. I think he has power. I think it's quiet, dignified power. And I think he actually does have a good background to possibly run the city.
Hazel, thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Ozzie Pabra from Capital New York, and our political reporter, Anna Sale. By the way, speaking of Thompson, in the Daily News yesterday, the Caribbean Beat columnist, Jared McAllister, pointed out that two local Caribbean papers endorsed Thompson in the last few days. I think there had been others previously. El Diario had already endorsed him. So there seems to be a push in central Brooklyn and other Caribbean population centers to get Thompson maybe into the number two spot ahead of Quinn, to make the runoff if there is a runoff.
Well, the Quinnipiac poll today that came out, I believe, showed an increase in Thompson support among likely Democratic voters who are black. But I believe the percentage of those voters who are expected to show up in the primary shrunk. So even if he's making ground, the question is going to be turnout.
Listeners, I want to do something else now. I think we've gotten a sense of how some of you feel on the de Blasio ad. So we're going to clear the lines. And so, screeners, you have the unfortunate job now of apologizing to everybody who's on hold that we're not going to take their calls. And for maybe a few more call-ins during this segment, let's crowdsource the primary day end game. Now, I'm going fishing here, guys, so we'll see if there's anything out there. But here's what I mean. Call in and report on the last-minute flyers and phone calls that you're getting and tell us if there's anything intriguing. Is there any dirty pool you want to blow the whistle on? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, by dirty pool, I mean low blow attack ads or fear mongering or demagoguing or anything a little sleazy, like sometimes comes out in the final days to suppress somebody's vote. And this can be from any campaign for any office, not just mayor. 212-433-WNYC. You get that? If you've gotten a flyer or a robocall or something that makes you think, oh, wow, really? They're going there? 212-433-9692. Let us know what it is, and maybe Anna, who's our flyers correspondent,
yes.
will get to it this afternoon. I wonder about last-minute low blows in the public advocate campaign. Some of those people don't seem to like each other very much at all. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. If you have anything like that, to report. All right. And while those calls are coming in, let's get back to the Republican mayoral candidates for a minute. They had their final televised debate yesterday. Former MTA chairman and Giuliani deputy mayor Joe Loda and Gristiti supermarket chain and oil company billionaire John Catsimatidis,
otherwise known as the Catman,
as he said to our Jessica Gould in an interview last week. He also calls himself a visionary, and he keeps trying to write off Loda as a bureaucrat. Loda's response?
John keeps calling me a bureaucrat. It was the New York Times who said when I left in 2001, the best part of Joe Loda was that he didn't like the bureaucracy, and he cut through the bureaucracy like a hot knife through butter.
And as for Catsimatidis, could he reach out to voters of color in the city?
All the minorities I've been to in the last 3 months, they love me. I have a love factor with the minorities. I've gone to every minority neighborhood. They all give me hugs.
Now, Anna, it's answers like that that have a lot of politics watchers baffled that this race might be as close as it is. Catsimatidis calls blacks and Latinos minorities. He says, when I've been to minorities, like when I've been to Mars, like it's the 1960s, and says they all give him hugs. He calls criminals hoodlums, like it's the 1950s. He calls for a new world's fair, like it's 1939, as a jobs creation program, and says you should be stopped and frisked if you walk funny or dress funny like we played before. Many people don't see him as a serious person, and yet the polls are close enough. How come? Who's missing what about the Catsman?
Well, I think a couple of things. I mean, he's spent more money than Joe Loda, according to the latest filings that we've seen. He's been out there months before any other mayoral candidates with ads, so his name recognition has sort of been out there. And he's run some good ads. I mean, he exploited the mall cop comment from Joe Loda when Joe Loda referred to Port Authority police officers as mall cops and had a very effective ad about that. So John Catsimatidis, when you listen to him at length, it does, he doesn't sound like the most like a conventional candidate, I will say that. But again, he spent more money, and these polls have been small sample sizes, and we will see what happens on the primary.
And maybe he spent his whole life, Ozzie, being underestimated while he started from the bottom, and now he's here as a supermarket and oil magnate.
Right. You don't make the kind of money that John Catsimatidis has by being completely ridiculous. He knows what he's doing in business. He obviously knows what he's doing in running a supermarket where he first made his money. The question is what he did to make his money transferable to public office? That is not entirely clear, but the ads that he's run have been effective. And remember, Joe Loda has, for better or for worse, the Rudy Giuliani factor. A lot of people like Rudy Giuliani. A lot of people don't, even in Republican primary circles. Plus, if you look at the ads that Catsimatidis has run, he's run front page ads in some of the local papers in every borough. And if you put them all next to each other, you may not know what's the latest thing happening with the mayor's taxi plan or with the soda ban, but you will have learned that John Catsimatidis is running. And in politics, that's the name of the game.
Let's go to some of our callers. And with us are WNYC political reporter Anna Sale, Ozzie Pabra, political reporter and blogger for Capital New York. But now to some of you on some of the last-minute flyers or robocalls or whatever that you think are intriguing. Monica in Red Hook, you're on WNYC. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Brian. You know, I wasn't against Sarah Gonzalez. I was just for Carlos Menchaca, and then I started getting these flyers, and they're horrible.
This is for city council, yep.
Yes, for city council. She's done a fake driver's license trying to make it appear as if he's not even registered to vote in New York. She's trying to make him appear like he just arrived and is trying to dupe people into voting for him when he's been here for 10 years working in public service. And it's just gotten so nasty, and it's all being paid for by PACs, by Jobs for New York and Coalition of Small Businesses, which are real estate PACs. Mm-hmm. And I'm stunned. I'm shocked at the vitriol involved in some of these flyers. Now, instead of just not being against her, I am steadfastly against her and going to work for him all day tomorrow as a result of these flyers.
Monica, thank you. And Anna, you reported on that race and a similar dynamic and jobs for New York, which is the real estate industry, and these other independent expenditure PACs.
Yeah, and those two mailers that you just mentioned, those are the jobs for New York mailers. So those didn't come out from the Sarah Gonzalez campaign. Those came out from the Jobs for New York group, which is backed by real estate money. And their primary message in that race, which is Sunset Park, Red Hook, that part of Brooklyn, is that Carlos Menchaca is new to Brooklyn, and it points out that he's from Texas and definitely connects that he is Mexican-American and Sarah Gonzalez is a Puerto Rican candidate. So definitely some racial overtones to those mailers that have come out from Jobs for New York in that district.
Monica, thank you. Georgina in Manhattan. Hi, Georgina.
Hi, Brian. I'm calling again. Another flyer from Jobs for New York, which I was duped by thinking that sounded like a good group. Now I'm listening and paying attention. And they are trashing a very young woman named Jennifer Rajkumar, who is running for city council and who really stood up and stood out at several meetings regarding the NYU versus Greenwich Village debates in city council. And now I understand that Jobs for New York is a real estate group. So, first of all, the flyer shows her on a paper clipped, and then a big stamp saying, missing. Kind of like a TV show, as though she were kidnapped, except what they mean is she's not been present at meetings, which is absolutely not true. So...
Tell me something. This flyer from Jobs for New York, does it say anything about jobs?
We need a council member who gets things done. Her absence from those meetings speaks louder than words. No, I can't read the word jobs anywhere.
Right. And I don't think we saw in the two Queens ones, the one you reported on, Anna, that the other caller was on, and another one that I was talking about last week in northeastern Queens. These Jobs for New York flyers don't say anything about jobs.
But they also have done a lot of positive mailers as well. Like in the Kirsten Foy race in Brooklyn, they don't talk about jobs, but they talk about how he's the authentic progressive. And they have one mailer that has Al Sharpton's photograph along with Kirsten Foy's union endorsement. So Jobs for New York has looked at these districts. They have very targeted messaging, and their positive messaging is around progressive issues. Their negative messaging looks to exploit the weaknesses of the candidates they're running against.
By the way, we should say that the race that Georgina was referring to is in Lower Manhattan for city council, right. Jennifer Rajkumar, who she mentioned, against Margaret Chin.
Right. And if you look at the dollars that Jobs for New York has spent, they've spent a lot more money in support of a candidate rather than against the candidate. And that distinction is broken up on the New York City Campaign Finance Board website. What's interesting is certain mailers, you would look at it and say that's a negative attack ad when it actually counts as an ad in support of someone. And what I mean by that is the ad they sent out in Eastern Queens in the race to replace Dan Halloran, where they referenced the Newtown shooting in Connecticut. And they said Paul Vallone is a candidate who will help pass strict gun control laws that will prevent this kind of thing from happening. It was very dramatic. It only spoke about Paul Vallone. It was for him, and they're supporting him. But the look and feel of it is very dramatic, but it technically counts as an ad in support. So it's a positive ad.
One more. Bob in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I just received a flyer anti-Scott Stringer. It's entitled Tax Breaks for Pedophiles. Scott Stringer says yes. Scott Stringer thinks we should support NAMBLA.
Really?
Really, yeah. And there's no ID on the who sent it out. And it's... you know, it cemented my view that I'm definitely voting for Scott Stringer when somebody would send out some outrageous campaign literature like that.
The reason why there's no paid-for-by stamp on it is because it was sent by the other campaign, Elliot Spitzer's. If it's a campaign that's sending it, you do not have to put the stamp on it. If you're an outside independent group, you do.
Aussie, have you heard of this before? This is Spitzer? Because I don't want to say because somebody called up the show and said this is happening, this is definitely happening.
I have not seen the flyer. I've seen the news article on which a flyer like this would be based, and New York City campaign finance rules say that if the campaign if your campaign is sending it, you don't have to identify yourself. If it's an outside group, you do.
And I understand that the factual basis is, according to the Daily News, right. He voted to let the North American Man Boy Love Association, which is a pedophiliac group, continue to receive tax breaks as a nonprofit when he was a state assemblyman in the 1990s. Was that a particular bill? Do we know? I don't know. My producer just looked that up real quick and said there was that article.
It's my understanding that the objection was for singling out a group and saying, because we don't like you, we're going to take away your tax exemption. And this is sort of the thing that has been happening with the IRS on the federal level of executing a certain level of scrutiny onto groups based on their ideology. And I believe Stringer's objection to it was, we don't want to single groups out. We need to have a broader policy.
All right. And as producer Jody Evergun is pounding on this to give you as much background as possible, quote from a Stringer spokesperson, he and 18 other progressive members of the state legislature voted on constitutional grounds that the legislature should not be freely and subjectively revoking the nonprofit status of groups, believing it would be a slippery slope that could lead to targeting of groups based on their political views. I guess that was in the Daily News article, too. All right. But I don't want to end on that note. So before we bring on Congressman Steve Israel from Long Island to support the idea of military strikes against Syria, tell me this, guys. Do you think Ristides is a political plus or a political minus or a political wash for the Catman in a Republican primary?
If it helps get his name out there, I think it's a small plus.
You know what? I haven't heard a lot about Ristides on the campaign trail. What I have heard in the last couple of days is a lot of comments about Syria when I ask voters about the mayor's race. So I think that's an interesting dynamic. The mayor's race not at the top of mind for voters, whether we're going to war or going to have these strikes.
Anna Sale teeing us up for our next segment with Congressman Israel. Thanks a lot. Ozzie, thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Congressman Steve Israel next.